Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. If you're on hold, stick with us. We'll be getting to your phone calls. It's our buddy Jason Lockhand for a special appearance. Hello, Jason.
Hey, Jason.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Oh, we don't know. Same hire, different year? Maybe?
Look, Kevin Stefanski is not Freddie Kitchens.
He's the same guy. The same hire with an Ivy League degree. Doesn't mean it won't work. Same hire with an Ivy League degree.
Yeah, look, I think Kevin Stefanski is being put in position to fail, and perhaps fail miserably. This was an outcome that, I'll just go back to what I reported. I don't know if it was October, November. We certainly talked about it, which was, hey, the smartest people in the room wanted this guy a year ago. And then, with further reporting, I got the specifics of exactly how the vote went. But it's kind of funny to have a six-person vote when three of them are voting as a block. You know what I mean? So it's kind of a bogus process, and I guess it gives ownership some measure of cover in that, hey, this is a cumulative decision, but let's be real. It all rests with the Haslams. Bringing Kevin Stefanski in now, a year later, expectations even higher. The need for discipline, the need for accountability, the need, a lot of people would say, for someone coming in with a resume that commands immediate respect. And I'm not talking X's and O's. I'm just talking about professional-grade operation, dudes not swinging helmets, guys not being ejected from week one, all the nonsense. I think, we'll see about infighting. There's always infighting in Cleveland, it seems. We'll see about the staff. It's going to be tough. I mean, Kevin Stefanski's two closest mentors are Pat Shurmur and Brad Childress. You think they're coming back in that building, guys?
I'm thinking no.
So that's already, It's already, you're getting somewhat neutered of what you could because of those dynamics. Now, I'm sure the Haslams would say, well, hey, this is the first time we've listened to the analytics guys across the board, right? Before we had their GM and Sashi Brown, we just had him paired with a guy who anybody who knew this league at all knew would be an absolute disaster. Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown were not going to ever pull in the same direction. That was not going to ever have any chance of working, and they were pretty much undermining each other from day one. Now, they would say, well, look, now everybody's kumbaya. It's rise of the numbers, supercomputers for all. Whatever, analytics, Uber Alice, and we're all on board. Still doesn't mean they have a clue. So, I don't know, guys. Where I stood on it. They stumbled into something. The model they stumbled into last year with, you've got strong analytics, but you've also got a defensive-minded head coach who, above all else, is at least going to have accountability. There's going to be discipline. There's going to be a sense that this is about something bigger than me. And you were not going to have any sacred cows. I don't know how that's going to play out on this staff. I don't know who the bad cop's going to be. And I don't know how it's going to work with a team that has a lot of personalities. You can kick John Dorsey out of the building, but the residue of the kind of team he built is still there. And it's going to be there for a while. And Kevin Stefanski's going to have his hands full on multiple levels, and he's working for an ownership group that, frankly, has not really gotten anything right.
All right, let me go back to the Jimmy Haslam and the ownership part of this. When every owner in the NFL is sitting in the same room, and they look at Jimmy Haslam, what are they thinking? And how much?
I don't know how much owners look at other owners the way we sort it out. You know what I mean? The guys who get looked at who get the stink eye are people like Mike Brown, who they feel like doesn't reinvest back in his team enough. You know what I mean? Doesn't bring anything to the table. I mean, say what you want about the Browns on the field. But off the field, they're winning a whole lot more now than they were when Haslam got there. And I think a lot of that is due to Joe Banner and some of the sponsorship deals and the things he got going and the revenue streams he helped them tap into when he was there that they're still profiting from. It's when you have a sleeping giant or they're looking at you and saying, man, what could somebody else do with that market? That's what it comes down to. But the competitive stuff and how they feel their team and how dysfunctional they are, I don't know that they you know what I mean, they think of it too much that way. Although I would like, and maybe I'll do it myself, and you won't get much of an answer, but like somebody should double back to the Roonies and be like, you mean they really fought for that. Like they told everybody this is going to be a slam dunk. He's going to turn the Browns around. Like they advocated for Jimmy Haslam more than they would have had to. And I don't know, man, because it's and they're usually pretty smart, and you defer to them because of the organization they've run. But those recommendations don't look too good right now.
Jason Luckan-Fora joining us. And, Jason, you've hired a guy who, to me, is so similar to other hires. It's you take the dart, you throw it at the dartboard, you hope you get a coordinator who's going to become a good head coach. And now you're pairing him with a general manager who you hope becomes a good general manager. Did you think Josh McDaniels was a good guy for this job, and would it have worked had they hired him, or did he want such control that it wasn't going to fly for Jimmy Haslam?
It's not that he wanted such control. He just had extreme reservations about this model. It's not that he had to pick every player. It's not that he wants control of the draft board. But it's, I'm not comfortable with this arrangement. And if that's what you guys are married to, you know, here's what I think I can bring to the table, and we'll talk it all out, and then, you know, I'm going to go home, and you guys will make your decision. But it was pretty clear that they were very wedded to this model. You know what I mean? This sort of paradigm and how who reports to whom, and Dee Podesta's still going to have a lot of power, and he's going to have the owner's ear, and he could send him, you know, reports every week telling you how everybody else in the building is messing up, you know, and he's on his laptop in La Jolla. I mean, you've got a shadow. You've basically got a proxy front office on the West Coast. That's never wrong because it's always after the fact. And, I mean, at least that's what John Dorsey thinks. And, you know, that's how Ray Farmer's looking at it. And that's, you know, anybody who's been in there would tell you that, hey, you know, those guys can't ever be wrong because they're telling them after the fact, he should have got a third-round pick in this deal too. And, hey, you know, our numbers say they should have done this and you should have done that, you should have done that. Now, maybe Haslam wasn't listening to them before, and maybe they do have it all figured out. But they've certainly got no excuses now. It's the coach they wanted, it's the arrangement they wanted, and it's the GM in charge they wanted. So this is it. You know, so we talked about the beginning of this process. They're either going to go completely away from that model to the point where the next guy says, I don't even want Dee Podesta to have the owner's email anymore, or Dee Podesta was going to get the entire building. And look, the GMs won. Marty Herney won in Carolina. He got Matt Rhule, who's not coming in guns a-blazing with his own personnel guy. He's, you know what I mean? He's cool with that arrangement. Dave Gettleman won. He found a 38-year-old who it'll be at least 2 or 3 years before he knocks on John Mara's door. Hey, boss, we still don't have any players. Right? That's not coming. Oh, sorry. You know, he won, and Dee Podesta won, and the GMs have been winning, and the team presidents have been winning for years in this league. And, you know, Jacksonville hasn't made any changes. Their GM's 36-76 since he got there in 2013. Detroit punted on, you know, a coaching search. The people sitting in the suites with the owners tend to win, and that's not the coaches.
All right, let me ask you this. If Dee Podesta won, and he's clearly the voice in Jimmy's ear, should you name him president of football, president of the Browns, and say, hey, I want you here all the time, let's do this, or are you going to let him manage from the laptop in California?
He hasn't displayed a willingness to want to be in that building. And I think he would tell you, from what I'm doing, cold, hard evaluation, like I'm going to be the cynic, I'm going to be the ultimate numbers guy, I'm going to be the outsider looking in. I don't want to be in the building because then the human element actually comes into play. And I might, you know what I mean? I might like this person. I think that's part of the appeal. I don't know that for a fact, but I know if you talk to people who are in the consulting industry in general or people who do this kind of work, they would say it's probably better to be afar than to have relationships and things like that sort of getting in the way of the you know, the higher truth.
Does
what you're saying make sense? Yeah, but I don't know that it applies in this case.
Hey, do we know anything about DePodesta's contract? Wasn't it supposed to be up?
Yeah, I mean, I assume that he will be getting a new deal out of this. I mean, he got his guys. I don't know why you wouldn't keep him around. I mean, it's all his. And look, they may revolutionize it. Like, they may. They didn't with Sashi, but okay, if you want to put that on Hugh, I get it. And Hugh was an awful head coach. So, okay, like, they may revolutionize it, but this isn't the sort of blank slate that it was. You know what I mean? When they went with the Hugh and Sashi.
Yeah.
Like, you're digging out of a hole now. Like, you already have all these pieces in place. You have these big contracts. You know, the quarterback is here now. And there's expectations, and you're supposed to win right now. Nobody's buying into another two-year plan, and that's very difficult for a guy like Kevin Stefanski, I think. And he may be – everything I hear about him, he's been on my radar for years. I think he could be a great NFL head coach. But the circumstances of this job right now, I think, are going to make it increasingly difficult for us to even know what kind of head coach he's going to be, because I think the staff, this sort of arrangement, the toxicity of that building, the constant mistakes, a team now that you've got to crack heads and you've got to get these men to kind of do something completely different than what they're used to doing. And I don't know, man. I think it's a tough spot.
All right, so you're Baker Mayfield yesterday. You're driving around, and all of a sudden your 92.3 The Fan app pushes out that Kevin Stefanski is the new head coach. So what are you thinking if you're Baker Mayfield?
I don't know. You know?
It's a weird spot. Like, I wonder if Paul DePodesta wanted Mayfield.
Yeah, I mean, that's – I don't know that. I don't have any reporting on that.
No, I just – I mean, these are the things I ponder.
But, yeah, it's something that I will try to dig down on. I mean, it is interesting.
Yeah.
I agree. It certainly seemed like Dorsey's pick, the way Dorsey handled it, how secretive they were about it. I mean, there's no way that Dorsey wasn't all in on it. It had a bit of a gambling element to it, and we know that that's very much in John's nature. Would he have been able to do it against, you know, the analytics guys kicking and screaming? No. I'm not sure. I don't think it came to that. But, yeah, I mean, if you're Baker now, I think what you're thinking is, I hope I'm with this guy for, like, give me 3 years at least, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what he's thinking. And I hope whoever the quarterback coach and offensive coordinator is, if they're leaving, it's only because they got a head coaching job somewhere else. I mean, I can't imagine that wouldn't be his first thought. Like, okay, I know he's a quarterback-driven guy. I know he's really smart. I know he's done some good things. You know, he had to be on the radar of Baker from a year ago because he was very much in the mix. But I think now it would just be like, God, I hope this is, you know, I hope when I get my second contract, this guy's still here.
Jason, last thing. You said Stefanski's been on the radar for some time. Why? What has he accomplished that, you know, what are folks seeing that made them think, yep, this is a guy that could be a big-time head coach?
I mean, he got into coaching at a very early age. You know, I think he was taught pretty well by mentors like Brad Childress, like Pat Shurmur, who I mentioned before. He's been a part of some winning offenses. He's very cerebral. He's kind of been a sponge and been smart about, I take a little bit of this, I take a little bit of that, and trying to make it my own. I think players like him, quarterbacks have liked him. But you don't know. But, I mean, look, at the end of the day, I have no idea. And, again, under these present circumstances, I think it's going to make it even more to evaluate him because he's trying to dig out of the mess of another one and done. He's got, you know, he's working for people who have shown no ability to put the right people in place, when to push the pedal, when to let them go, when to back off, when to step in, how to establish some sort of a culture in that building that leads to people pulling in the same. I mean, he's got a lot of hurdles to clear.
Always a pleasure, sir. We thank you.
Thanks,
you got
Jason.
It, guys. Thank you. Have a good one.
Jason LaCanfora, Radio.com Sports Insider.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.